Good afternoon, and welcome to the second briefing in the Kaiser Family Foundation's new webcast series, U.S. Global Health Policy in Focus. We are coming to you live from our broadcast studio in Washington, D.C. I'm Jen Cates, Vice President of the Kaiser Family Foundation. In Focus brings you discussions and takes your questions about current issues and debates concerning the U.S. government's role in global health as a donor, partner, implementer, and often world agenda setter. Each program features leaders in their fields who share their views and experiences with us. Today, we are very pleased to have an expert panel to discuss the President's fiscal year 2010 budget request for global health and the new global health initiative he just announced. In addition to discussing the proposed budget for programs such as the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, and the President's Malaria Initiative, the PMI, we will look more broadly at other areas of global health and discuss what will happen next with the budget. Again, today's conversation is live and interactive, and we encourage you to submit questions now or as we go along. You can email your questions to infocus@kff.org. I would now like to introduce our guests. First, we have Dr. Zeke Emanuel, who's health Senior Special Advisor for Health Policy at the White House Office of Management and Budget.
Thank you.
Tim Westmoreland, Visiting Professor and Senior Scholar in Health Law at Georgetown Law, and Consulting Counsel for the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. Tom Hart, Senior Director of U.S. Government Relations for One, and Alan Moore, Distinguished Fellow with the Stimson Center. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
We hope to have a candid conversation today about the budget and the President's new Global Health Initiative. And again, to our audience, you can email us questions during this webcast. Send them to infocus@kff.org. So, Zeke, I'd like to start with you. The President announced the budget last week and specifically highlighted global health with a new initiative and put out some funding numbers. Can you give us a sense of that and describe it for us?
Well, I think first it's also important to put it all into context. We've had a major economic disruption in the country, a need for a $800 billion stimulus package to get the economy going. And in that context, the President proposed more than $8 billion, $8.5 billion for global health, an increase of about $500 million for global health, which is a tremendous contribution, and again, in very, very tight budgetary times. The projection, or the budgets are formulated in terms of long-term commitments. The President's been very committed to global health and to doing a lot more in the world to improve the lives of people in the world. And so over the next 6 years to 2014, the President has budgeted in excess of $63 billion for global health, which is a huge increase over what we've been doing in the past. And I think it constitutes a major mark for what he wants to accomplish and in terms of relief of suffering overseas. And so this is a major initiative. We've also, in that context, need to be aware that Congress has asked for a strategic plan regarding PEPFAR, the President's emergency initiative related to HIV/AIDS. That's due to be completed by October of this year to sort of rethink the program. I would say that there are several themes, if I could go on for just a little longer, underlying the President's proposal. The first theme is healthcare is not, you know, one disease at a time, especially in the developing world. The idea is not to just attack disease by disease, but to now begin to think more holistically across many diseases and across the sort of underlying causes of these diseases, and to try to build infrastructure. So that would be one, to begin thinking more holistically and less, as the lingo goes in this area, stovepipe. I mean, I come from NIH where we talk about silos. Here, I guess it's stovepipes. So that's one thing. The second thing is also to try to begin to move things onto a more sustainable course. President Bush began with the PEPFAR initiative, a tremendously important initiative, but it was an emergency initiative, and to try to get our programs into a more sustainable effort so that it's not just constantly funded by us, but we can get them into really changing the infrastructure of the health delivery systems, strengthening the personnel, and really making a big effort so that these things are not, you might say, wobbly. A third initiative is to try to really emphasize and focus on the most cost-effective interventions. We should really be trying to get the biggest bang for the buck, as it were, and trying to do as much health improvement as we can with the resources that we have available. Because after all, especially in these tight times, we don't have unlimited resources. Anyone who's worked in the developing countries knows their heart just goes out because of so much need. And we can't satisfy all the need initially. So we are forced to make some really, unfortunately, very tough choices. And when you make those kind of tough choices, one of the things you want to do is to make sure you're having the biggest impact for the efforts you're doing. So I think that's been a key touchstone. And the last touchstone, I would say, is the sort of president's, is a forward-looking person and is really interested in, throughout the budget, not just in global health, but also in global health, in the future and in future generations and in children and in giving our children and the children of the world a secure future. And I think that's a theme that goes through the global health budget, thinking more about how to make sure that we really provide children in developing countries who die at an extraordinary rate, 8 to 10 million a year, how to give them a secure and healthy future.
Okay. Thanks. Now, in the budget request, mm-hmm. Included in the numbers that were put out was PEPFAR amounts, PMI right. amounts, so TB, malaria, yep. HIV. What else was in that total? What are the other global health priorities that the administration is looking at across the broader portfolio?
There's maternal and child health initiatives, which is, as I said, a major focus and something that the president has is a sort of fundamental to his vision. There's also the whole issue of neglected diseases that have traditionally been neglected and not well funded. Unfortunately, while many of these diseases do not cause death, they cause tremendous amount of disability and economic dislocation. So that's another area that's going to get focus. An attempt to reduce unintended pregnancies and reduce abortions worldwide is another emphasis that the president has in this budget.
Okay. We're going to come back to some questions around balancing all of that in the portfolio. I want to actually turn to Tim Westmoreland. And Tim, we asked Tim to be part of this because he's an expert on the budget and how the budget works and what some of the calculations are that are going on in the larger budget world. We're talking about global health, the global health part of the budget, which, for those who don't know, is less than 1% of the overall pie, mm-hmm. as is the development portfolio overall. So stepping back for a minute and putting this in context, what are the pulls and the tugs on the budget that this little sliver has to fit into right now?
Well, this is a budget unlike any other budget year. The budget is in tremendous flux, maybe cataclysmic flux, as we try to deal with two wars and a declining economy that we're trying to bring back. But just look in any one budget year, just looking at how much global health occupies in a federal budget is sort of surprising if you work only within the realms of global health. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of the overall federal budget. This year's congressional budget resolution anticipates that the total federal budget is going to be about $3.5 trillion. And it's probably – that probably includes, without saying it, another $1 trillion in tax spending, the tax loopholes for specific purposes. So we're talking about $4.5 trillion of federal money going in and out in one way or another. Now, a lot of that money is already claimed for mandatory spending programs, for insurance programs and those things for which the statute makes a promise. And so what we're really comparing this to compare apples to apples for global health, is we're comparing it to about $1.2 trillion of discretionary spending coming up this year. And global health, global health aid spending, all of these different initiatives, they seem like a tiny amount, and we should be able to find more. And we could, perhaps even double these numbers and it wouldn't affect the overall budget very much. But as I say, it's a very bad budget year coming forward. This may be only half of 1% of something or something like that of discretionary spending. But the budget resolution that the Congress just passed calls for significant cuts in discretionary spending coming forward. We're talking about 18% overall if you're counting defense in it. We're talking about almost 25% if you don't count defense. So that's a lot of money to cut from existing programs all over the government. And it's going to be very difficult to find any additional money, whatever the program is. And it's not to say that global health is not an important program. It is. But it's going to be very difficult because everybody else is going to be facing lots of cuts in their programs too. And it is what I think many nonprofit people would be familiar with. It's going to be a time of donor fatigue for the Congress. I mean, it's not quite donor fatigue as much as deficit fatigue. I can't tell you how tragic it is that this global health initiative and health reform and other things like that come after the collapse of the banks instead of before the collapse of the banks, because I believe many members of Congress are looking over their shoulders now and saying, oh, these deficits from the banks, I've already spent the money I could afford to spend someplace else. So I think it's going to be a very thin budget year coming forward, especially for discretionary spending. And I think it's going to be very hard to find additional money over what the president requested.
Okay. That's a little bit sobering.
Bleak.
bleak. Well, Tom, turning from that potentially bleak perspective and thinking from your perspective about the global health agenda and the different pieces from the one perspective, but also the broader community of advocates working now, the role that the advocacy community plays in the budget process, what was your reaction and what were some of the issues that came up? Did it match the budget proposal? Did it seem to match what the community had been hoping for?
Well, I don't know that any president could match what the community is hoping for or indeed what's needed. I mean, there's always so much more that needs to be done. But I think Tim hit it on the head. We're in a very, very sober time. And advocates like ourselves who are looking for more in trying times when your shovel-ready projects in Malawi are not exactly the most politically salient. It's very, very difficult to try to push for more. And so I think the president's announcement was quite welcome in that context. It's always good to have the president of the United States calling for more, even if it's not as far as we would like to go, because, of course, having him in this case fight to expand the pie with Congress, I think, is going to be absolutely critical, absolutely critical. And so the broad $63 billion six-year announcement was one that we welcomed. I think particularly interesting and hopeful is looking forward the full commitment of support for PEPFAR, although over 6 years, not five, as the authorization articulated. A little bit more sobering was the 2010 budget, particularly requests for HIV/AIDS, particularly two very, I think, very effective mechanisms in PEPFAR and the Global Fund. We're not where we hope they would be. We're looking forward to working with Congress to see if we can improve those. But I think that the overall perspective, again, is a hopeful one. And we at the moment, all the signals we get in our own analysis show that it is possible to achieve really real big progress over the next several years.
And what about, in addition to HIV and TB and malaria, what about maternal and child health and family planning and some of the other specific areas that were outlined in the budget? I mean, how did those fare? What are people thinking about that?
Well, some of it is unknown. Some of the details have yet to be fleshed out by the administration in terms of child and maternal health. Right. But I think it was very welcome to take a more comprehensive global health approach in this. During the Bush administration, there was obviously some real targeted focus, which I think was both necessary and helpful. But now looking at a broader health agenda that includes child maternal health, neglected tropical diseases, that additional focus and breadth, I think, is really welcome. And I think we are going to work, very hard over the next several years to see that realized. If you look at the budget, if you just held global health constant, what the president announced is about a $14 billion increase in spending. That's pretty substantial. And so we welcome that, and it's good to see that cut across HIV/AIDS, TB, malaria, but also other important health interventions that we need to be concerned with.
I don't know, Zeke, if you want to talk a little bit about some of the other areas in the budget, if there are the numbers to share, I'm not sure. But also this other question of what does the administration do next in terms of Congress and bringing forward this initiative as something that's important to the administration? We knew that in PEPFAR that made a difference.
So let me say two things. The first is to talk about some of the other areas. Another area that has, I think, been high on the priority list that, certainly of the administration, but also high, I think, in the American public's attention is malaria. Mm-hmm. And malaria in this budget sees a 36% increase from 2009 to 2010. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, a real commitment by the president to try to have a substantial impact on this disease. It affects pregnant women. It affects children disproportionately. And I think there's a real concern that this is a big in terms of mortality, big in terms of disability, life years lost, and something we can do something about. We have real effective and not very expensive interventions in terms of bed nets and treatment. In terms of working with Congress, I think the fact that this was announced at the White House, the fact that Spokesman Gibbs announced it and Jack Lew, the Deputy Secretary of State, was there to emphasize it, gives you an indication of the depth of commitment of the administration to this initiative. Mm-hmm. And again, if it really wasn't committed, there would be no reason in this budgetary time, as Tim has emphasized, to stick our neck out to raise the amount of money we're spending here because, you know, frankly, in tough economic times, people, you know, are naturally focused on, at home, focused on their own situation, which is perfectly understandable. But the president also recognizes that the country needs to be engaged in the world, wants to be engaged in the world, as the Kaiser poll itself indicated. The American public is quite sympathetic to health concerns overseas. I think we realize that we're in a globalized world, that what happens overseas affects us, doesn't just stay there, as it were. And I think there's a real commitment to doing more there and a real commitment to seeing this budget through. I don't think the president just put this out to get shot at and not to stand behind it. I think he's very committed to this and will work very hard to get it enacted.
I'm actually turn to Alan, because Alan was working on the Hill when PEPFAR was first proposed and constructed and played a role in that. Can you share with us what, you know, what is going to happen now in, from the congressional perspective, and what's the likely course of action, and what's different now than was the case then?
There are several things that are different. The first item has been talked about, and that is this unique economic environment that we're in, which puts even more pressure than normal on efforts to increase foreign assistance. It's just very hard in a Congress where the focus is domestic. Members of Congress and senators have to respond to the priority concerns of the folks back home. And whenever you're spending money overseas, that's money that, in the eyes of voters, you're not spending at home. So it's a tough pull at any point in time, and all of those factors are even just exacerbated now. Having said that, what that means a couple of things. It means there's a relatively small number of members of Congress who care passionately about this. Some of them have been, if you will, spoiled in recent years because you had a Republican president who was pushing very hard, particularly in AIDS and then also in malaria, to grow the amount of federal spending for these purposes. And some of the natural pushback that one might expect from conservative Republicans as well as Democrats was neutralized because President Bush was so actively asserting himself, and that helped to mute some of the hesitation and concern. As a result, we saw very dramatic growth in spending and an enormous amount of bipartisan pride in the Congress for what was achieved. And the Republican and Democrat members of Congress who have paid attention to global health feel like this was a cooperative enterprise, that it was that credit should be shared with the president and the handful of folks, of leaders in the Congress who care. Now, we've lost some of those leaders in the Congress. We've got a very different dynamic in the political realm, as well as this overhang of the economy. You've got two groups in the Congress who care about global health. You've got those who just embrace it, but who aren't key players. there's, we have to acknowledge, some disappointment on their behalf, particularly on the AIDS numbers, because they were used to getting significant growth, and this year, the year we're currently in, there was not a lot of growth. In the first year in the president's proposal, there's almost no growth for AIDS spending. And we may get to some of the problems that creates on the ground, because there are some real problems that creates. It's not just expectations, but it's not as though there's no impact on the ground. You have this other group in the Congress who care about this stuff, but who have the responsibility to figure out how much money to devote to global health. And it's a small group. They are the leaders of the Senate and the House. They are the leaders of the Senate and House Appropriations Committees, who play a major role in deciding what size, what amount of money will go to all of foreign assistance. And then that goes to a subcommittee. There's a House subcommittee and a Senate subcommittee. In the House, Congresswoman Nita Lowey of New York is the chair. She's a very important player. In the Senate, Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont is the chair of that subcommittee. They are the ones who are handed an amount of money. They can't increase that amount of money. They're told, here's how much you get. Here are all the things you have to spend money on, and it's not just global health. All the aid to the Middle East, to Egypt, to Israel, to Jordan, to Pakistan, to Afghanistan, to Iraq, all the reconstruction aid for those countries, that comes out, it has to come out of this particular pot. Some of those items are pretty sacred. And that reduces the amount of money that you can spend on things like global health, on poverty reduction, on agriculture support. So there's a relatively small amount of money that will ultimately go into those subcommittees, and they will have to divvy this up. And those members are not potted plants. They don't just take what the president asks for and say, fine, we'll bless it. They pay a lot of attention to what their president seeks, and they know that he has reasons for what he has requested. But they're constrained by the amount of money they're given, which will be probably less than what the president wants for foreign assistance. We have to anticipate that. And then they have their own internal priorities. Mrs. Lowey loves to spend money on education for girls in poor countries, and she typically finds a way to increase the amount for education. Senator Leahy has been a longtime champion of humanitarian concerns, refugees and displaced persons. He's often trying to squeeze a little extra money out for that. And he heretofore was the champion of neglected tropical diseases. There's a lot of activity that has to go forward among a very small group of people in this difficult environment with finite resources. And now is when the activists and the president are stepping up and saying, we need more here, we need more there. But at the end of the day, there'll be a fixed amount of money that that small group has to decide how to divvy up.
And I want to actually turn to Tim for a second on this, because you mentioned the foreign assistance side and the discretionary part of that's going to play out there. And that's the bulk of the global health funding. But there's discretionary global health funding in the HHS side as well. And I assume the battles and challenges and dynamics are going on.
The same process goes on for each. I mean, what he was describing was essentially prepare to be overwhelmed by poetry of budgeting, the 302A, 302B allocation process, where 302A says, here's how much discretionary spending there is for the whole government, military and non-military. And then 302B is the allocation subcommittee by subcommittee of what the total amount of money is that they can spend. And that total is, as he's suggesting, set. And after that, it becomes a zero-sum game. And it really is what I usually refer to as lamb eat lamb. that if you want to increase spending in one area, you almost have to, especially in times like this when a whole amount of spending is going down in discretionary spending, you almost have to find somebody else's program to cut. So there are programs for global health in the foreign assistance budget, and there are some in the HHS budget, but the dynamic is the same. Right. Everybody probably has already spent right up to their subcommittee target, and after that, it's a zero-sum game.
I actually want to pick up on that concept of the zero-sum, because And we have several questions, and I'll get to a few in a minute, from people that emailed in that are concerned about the particular area they're most interested in, TB, for example. What happened to TB? Did it really increase between 09 and 10? And what's going to happen in the out years? And then there's what about HIV? And so how, given the scenario and the particular scenario that we find ourselves in with the tough times, how did the administration approach thinking ahead on the different components and getting to that, you know, the six-year sense? What calculations went into that?
I think the point is exactly right. You know, it's not like the administration itself at the Office of Management Budget with state, with HHS, did not have to wrestle with these questions and have to think through the difficult choices. Fortunately, again, as I've mentioned at the start, there is this strong commitment to the existing programs for very good reason, and a strong commitment to actually expanding the whole global health area. So we didn't want to cut it in these tough times, and we didn't in the proposed budget. So let's talk about the different components for a second, and I have to say I'm a doctor, not a green-eyed shade guy. So I might not have every decimal point correct here. But about 75% of the budget goes to of the global health commitment goes to PEPFAR. So in fiscal year 2010, the president's budget proposed $8.65 billion for global health, and about 75% of that goes to HIV/AIDS and the PEPFAR initiative. Substantial amount of money. As I mentioned, the malaria initiative increased by 36% in that year, and the remaining relatively small amount goes to all the other things that we're committed to in global health, maternal child health, neglected tropical diseases, and other areas. That's been the tough choices. I think I'm correct in saying this, I don't think anything was cut. Certainly, we did not cut TB. It went up, I think, around 7 or so percent in line with other items in the budget. Again, let me say, one of the philosophies we would like to get away from is this idea of the stovepipes, thinking about if mine didn't get it. A lot of these health programs have effects on the whole health system, and we want to emphasize that. We want to build more into the infrastructure, build more on the synergistic places, because you don't just have a patient with HIV. Those patients have HIV, they have TB, mm-hmm. they get diarrhea, they get parasites. And the issue is to segregate out each of these diseases, I think, is, again, to be too narrow. I agree with what Alan said. You know, to get a major program like PEPFAR up and running, you do have to be focused. You do have to be targeted. You're going into countries. You're building infrastructure. You can't do everything. You can't solve all the problems all at once. But now that we're going really from an emergency to a sustainable long-term program, we do have to think about these things in a different light. That being said, projecting out, as we look at the $63 billion over the next 6 years, what we're trying to do, as I mentioned, is to emphasize mothers and children, emphasize getting the biggest bang for the buck and making sure we can have as big an impact as we can, emphasize quantitative hard outcomes, health improvements, preventing disease, and we want to, I think, build this infrastructure. The other thing I would say is, as we progress, even in the 2013, the fifth year of the, or 2014, the fifth year of the projected budget, the PEPFAR programs have 70% of the total. It's not like somehow they're disappearing off the map here. And I think we really do need to put this into context. In the first 5 years, the projected spending on HIV, AIDS, and PEPFAR was $21 billion altogether. The president's proposal is for $51 billion, a 150% increase over 6 years. And that's a pretty substantial commitment that's not backing away from any commitments. I think it's reemphasizing the importance of PEPFAR for the nation and in the president's priorities.
actually going to turn to a question. This one is from Smita Barua from the Global Health Council, who did also ask that about the projections. So hopefully that answers her question there. But she asked about health systems and how that gets sort of factored in into the $63 billion. And I'm sure it's complicated because we do, in a sense, have stovetypes that are operating. Mm-hmm. And so in how much of right now is the administration approaching the health systems question from a strategic, let's look at it and look at our existing programs and figure out how much is actually reallocating or thinking about budgeting? Is it building on, you know, how is that going to unfold?
So there's been established an interagency process where we bring together everyone who has a stake in this, the State Department, USAID, Health and Human Services through the CDC and the NIH and other programs, DOD, the Department of Defense, all the programs that have a substantial investment in global health. And we're trying to build a more systematic, thoughtful way of approaching global health. And again, trying to find out those areas that are synergistic across many health outcomes. That's the first thing. So that when we build infrastructure, for example, for HIV/AIDS, it's multi-purposed. And it's not just targeted on one thing, but can address, you know, maternal-fetal transmission, maternal-fetal health, as well as well baby care and deliveries. The second thing is, beginning in 2011, there is going to be some direct investment in infrastructure and healthcare infrastructure to try to build that up. Third, there are other programs besides the PEPFAR program that have the capacity with them because of the way they're structured to really build up infrastructure. The sweeps for treatment in neglected tropical diseases that we fund have the capacity, again, to build up trained personnel, to build up health facilities in various villages. So that's some of the thinking in this area. I'd say the third point I'd like to make is that Congress has mandated a strategic plan for PEPFAR to be delivered in October, and that is giving us an opportunity to think through the program, think through its contributions in various areas, treatment, prevention, education, as well as infrastructure and sustainable programmatic aspects. That's a process which I think is going to be very important, and I think it'll help us focus attention on how we can get important infrastructure elements for health systems to make them sustainable and to increase their capacity through the PEPFAR program.
Okay. One follow-up question, and then I want to get to the broader issue of foreign aid reform and how this all might fit in there. We have a question here from Menno Van Hilton, who's with the World Health Organization, picking up on what you talked about, the interagency group. This person was curious about the Institute of Medicine's recommendation in a report that came out in December that basically said create a White House interagency committee on global health. Is what you're talking about, it's based in the White House and it's coming from the White House and pulling together the agencies?
Right. It's being chaired by the NSC, the National Security mm-hmm. Council, and exactly that, which is to try to integrate and unify and make more coherent the programs. And, you know, I would say that there is a big focus on trying to make these programs synergistic, to make them work together, and to make sure that the spillover from one program to the next is positive and not somehow we've got too many different directives that are sort of contradictory and people in the countries that are trying to work with the programs get different messages. And so I think that's a very important process, and it does. I mean, the Institute of Medicine did deliver that message. I think it was heard loud and clear, and I think that the current new NSC individuals are working very vigorously with the agencies. And I've been to those meetings, and I think there's a lot of interest, and you know, almost all the agencies are responding to this with enthusiasm. The budget proposals are up, and the question is, how can we do more and do it effectively?
Yeah, Alan.
Before you turn, I want to say a couple things again about how the global health community has been responding to all of this. On the one hand, I think everyone says it is fantastic that global health continues to be a priority. The Global Health Initiative still to be fleshed out. The out-year budget details still to be fleshed out. A lot of interest in that. Having said that, I think it's worth noting that then why would anybody be distressed at anything that's going on? And there is a lot of distress, particularly among the global AIDS folks. And there's some reasons for their distress. A, they've enjoyed enormous increases. When the words stovepipe or silo are used, they would opt for a term that one of your White House colleagues used in a different context. This isn't a silo. This is a cylinder of excellence. And we are producing great results, and we're doing a lot. We in PEPFAR are trying to do a lot of the building out, strengthening of health systems activity that's being talked about. It's not as though this is a brand new subject, never before discovered. Their concerns, though, do have a basis, and that is that last year one of the congressional leaders in reauthorizing the whole PEPFAR program was Vice President Biden, a huge supporter who helped shepherd through the Congress a $48 billion AIDS, TB, and malaria bill over for 5 years. The president, during the campaign, said not only did he like that, but at a different point said he would like to spend $50 billion over 5 years just on AIDS. So in that context, putting aside, if you will, the realities of a global recession, of a horrendous domestic budget, I think one can see that they would say that why somebody might at least have some sort of basis to say, wait a minute, you're not doing what you said you were going to do. And the role of advocates is not only to call attention to that, but also, as I alluded to in my earlier remarks, it's not as though there aren't real on-the-ground impacts of, if you will, flat funding the programs. It means, and there are many anecdotes, and I'm not here to be the advocate, but more to explain a little bit of what's going on out there in the world. If you're not going to get more money, can you put new people onto antiretroviral treatment? Can you move people to the second-line, more expensive ARV treatment when they develop internal resistance to the first line? Can you move more resources into the world of prevention, which is obviously the long-term answer, if there is one, on the ground to dealing with AIDS? Can you build out the circumcision activities that we created so much excitement just in the last year or two, if there's no money for growth? So these are the issues. That and there are many anecdotes from people who run programs that we can't promise to put new people on ARVs. That means people are not coming in for counseling and testing, which is a key part of all of this. So I want to remind us all that though the president could have done significantly less, there were elevated expectations based on experience and what the president said. Now, all of those messages will be brought to the Congress.
Right.
And the Congress ultimately has to decide how much money they're going to spend here. So there will still be efforts to move money around. There will be a zero-sum game. If you add more money for AIDS, where does it come from? If you add more money for family planning, where does it come from? So I just wanted to say the attention turns to the Congress, but there's a big dynamic, powerful feelings, nation's editorial writers. The president himself, though, is still the key. He is the single most powerful person here.
Let me just highlight three quick points. And, Alan, I think you've expressed it absolutely perfectly. The first thing is, when you work in the developing countries and when you go there, I think, you know, your heart just sort of explodes with the level of need and across a wide spectrum of health demands. And it is, I think, tragic to some degree that we can't do more. Having worked for a decade now in developing countries when I was at the NIH and doing a lot of programs there, mainly revolving around research, and there's just no doubt that there's a lot to be done, and again, across a wide spectrum of health needs. So whatever we do is not going to be enough. And that is the tragedy. And it, you know, I think all of us feel that. And I don't think, even if you're a green eye shade kind of guy and not a doctor, you still feel that if you've been to these places. The second thing is, I think you're absolutely right. The bill that was passed, the authorization bill that was passed for $48 billion, the president's comments on the campaign trail, they were all absolutely sincerely meant. They were all intended. There is this intervening factor. It's called a worldwide recession, if not depression, that has wiped out trillions of dollars of value in the world. And to behave as if that hasn't happened, I think, would be sort of imaginary wishful thinking. It reminds me of, sometimes when you wish something bad hadn't happened, you just sort of ignore it. But we can ignore it. I mean, that's the context in which we're in. The Congress has passed $800 billion stimulus to try to get the world economy as well as the U.S. economy up, which will help everyone. And the third point I would make and emphasize is everything you say about HIV is absolutely right. You know, if there's tough choices about how many more people to put on ARVs because we have a lifetime commitment once people are on ARVs, how much to allocate to prevention. But we should also recognize the other side. It's not as if people in developing countries only suffer HIV or AIDS. We know that 9 million children a year, under 5, die of simple, curable things, pneumonia, diarrhea. And if we put money to HIV and we don't put money to children in terms of respiratory diseases or diarrhea, you know, it's not like they don't, their deaths don't count, aren't as tragic. This is one of the problems of this area. It is tragic. And there are very tough choices. And, you know, that's, I wish it weren't true.
And I totally agree. And just to add one thing to your argument, one of the impacts of this global recession is lack of food, which is a problem exacerbated by the global recession. I mean, let's face it, if you're really poor in a poor country, in an agrarian economy, the global recession doesn't affect you all that much. You're still living off your little plot of land. You start poor, you end poor. And if rich people get poor, it doesn't affect you. So there's some of that that goes on. But in many countries that rely on the world to provide food assistance, and that whole situation has been exacerbated, and we have a finite amount of money to spend. We may spend money to keep people just alive on food, and it has to come from something else. Right. There's a lot of competition in a difficult environment for scarce resources, no question about it.
And the White House is working on food security as well.
Tim, and then...
I need to be heard to say something. I started this by saying, let's be realistic about the budget. But that assumes the budget is the place to start. We could equally look to see whether last year's investment in global health had anything related to the need at the time. And more important, whether the growth in the budget is paralleling not what we can find in discretionary spending and 302B totals, but whether it's paralleling the growth of the problem. And I would say that I think we can probably all sit here and agree we're going to fall behind. The epidemics and the diseases are going to go faster than the discretionary spending now allows. So I think it is the role of advocates not to accept what I just laid out of this is the role of the budget. But the role of advocates is to come and say, you're not meeting the need. I don't care what last year's spending was compared to this year's spending. You, the Congress, you, the administration, you're not meeting the need to begin with. And percentage growth over an inadequate base doesn't help. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, advocates should recognize that it's a bleak atmosphere and that they're really up against a bad odds here. But it does not strike me that the Wall Street bankers are coming and saying, you know, it's not pragmatic for me to be asking this level of funding. They are asking for as much as they think they can compel people to believe. And I think that the advocates should not listen to my numbers here today and self-censor themselves and say, this is as much as we can reasonably hope for. It may be as much as you can reasonably hope for, but not as much as you can aspirationally hope for both the administration and the Congress. The bankers aren't self-censoring themselves, and I don't think global health advocates should either.
Let's turn to budget is an aspiration.
I do, actually.
Tom.
I was going to risk being optimistic for a second by trying to, I mean, we've heard of the political, the financial, the real constraints that are under. And if I were watching this program, I would think, why bother trying? We certainly can never reach what's needed. We're in a dire political situation. Congress is going to be extraordinarily difficult, you know. But as advocates, I agree with you. I think we not only need to talk about the need and try to inspire action that way, I think we need to be a bit shrewd about how we talk to politicians about this and make it interesting and vibrant and exciting and politically necessary to succeed. And we will fight for every dollar and that we can possibly get. But I think we've learned a few things over the last couple years, and I just want to highlight two of them. One is, I think one of the good things about PEPFAR was it focused on real, achievable outcomes. 2-7-10, 2 million people on treatment, 7 million preventions, 10 million people cared for. I would urge the administration to take that same sort of headline or specific achievable result approach, because $63 billion over the next 6 years, while good in many respects, ends up being numbers on a page rather than lives in a country. So if you focus on a particular result, actually the numbers become the vehicle toward an end rather than the end in themselves. So I would encourage that, and I think we will do better up on Capitol Hill and with the American public by describing it in such terms. The other is, and I'm not the most articulate spokesman for this particular point, but is the link to national security. Secretary Gates has been, I would say, the most eloquent in terms of linking both global health and global development and our soft, or as people say, smart power, non-military tools of foreign policy, of which global health is a critical one. It is these ARVs are one of the only ways some people in villages in Africa meet America. What an amazing advertisement for our compassion, for our technology, and for our priority. And so I think that that is another thing that I think Capitol Hill and more importantly the American public can understand, that this little fraction of the budget plays an incredible role, I would say disproportionately impactful role, in the way America is viewed around the world. And I would say we need to focus on that.
Yeah.
I totally agree with Tom. My former boss, former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, is fond of saying that people are a lot less likely to try to kill you if you keep their child alive. And this message is really crucial. Having said that, I think it's also important in the Congress, when you get to the Appropriations Committee, to deal with facts. They have to make hard numbers decisions. They need facts. And in that regard, I'm going to give your paper, Jen, a little plug, just from April of last year, a paper that Jen and my colleague, Dr. Julie Fisher, put together about the U.S. global health policy architecture. It's really an interesting total picture of what we're doing. If you don't know the facts, if you are just pure emotion, you're not going to be persuasive. Emotion is really helpful, but you've got to have the facts to make the case that will persuade appropriators to make these hard internal decisions.
I actually want to pick up on this issue of national security and what resonates. We released a survey last week where we looked at this question. We polled the American public and we said, you know, asked them a lot of reasons. Do you support global health, a role for the U.S. government? And actually, even with the recession, people do support our spending. We asked several questions about what motivates people. You know, do you think we should be doing this because it's the right thing to do? Do you think we should be doing this because it protects our image in the world? All of those things matter to the American public, but when we push them, what they really say is because it's the right thing to do. So that's an interesting thing, and I wonder if the issue of national security is one that, and what we posit is maybe it resonates better on the Hill and with the elites, or does it have to be better translated to the American public?
I think the American public, you know, many people who travel here are always surprised by the compassion and the big-heartedness of the American public. Seen from afar, we sometimes look a little insular. But in point of fact, I think the American public really does care. And I think the sort of globalization of communication, our understanding and ability to see what's happening around the world, has made it much clearer to the public that there is real suffering out there, one. And second, that we're linked to these people. We're not separate from these people, either from a health standpoint, from a global security standpoint, but just from a simple, purely humanitarian standpoint. And so I do think, as your survey suggests, people really do care about this, and they care about it on purely idealistic terms. And the sort of pragmatic, practical terms may be second. And you may be right that in Washington, on the Hill, the pragmatic may be more important. But I also think that the idealism has been important. You know, we went into PEPFAR and we, you know, under the last administration contributed so much, a lot for, you know, reasons of idealism, that these were people who were suffering and we had something that could really make a difference and save lives. And I think that's the same kind of hopeful commitment that this administration wants to bring to bear. And I think, you know, motivates us. And, you know, part of what motivates us is try to do this for as many people as possible and to make that difference for the millions of people who are dying from everything from diarrhea to HIV/AIDS.
I also think it's possible that some people who are not motivated by altruism may be motivated by a sense of national security, and that if you can motivate as many people as possible by their sense of generosity and compassion, great. And then there is another way to address this problem, too, because it really is something that is a national security issue. And I think you may motivate especially a group of politicians who would be less inclined to vote their dollars on compassion and more inclined to vote them on national security. Yeah.
My cold shower reading of your poll, though, was yes, the spending on global health enjoys wide support, 75% of the American people in one way or the other, 70%+. But the flip side of that is the extent to which that same group of people think we should increase the amount we invest. And what I saw was about 25% would say, we're willing to invest even more, and 70%+ said either we'd rather pay attention to local needs before we increase it, and then there's some who would decrease it from where we are now. So that gets to the political challenge. Yes, there's support for the idea, but when push comes to shove in a budget environment, most people are saying, no, we got enough health problems at home that we need to prioritize before we increase what we're doing overseas, and that's what is so constraining from a political standpoint, not to mention the budget problems.
I think in hard times, you have to have hard-headed arguments. I mean, I think much of the progress that we've had over the last 5 to 10 years has been as a result of goodwill and compassion and politicians willing to take risks because that they believed it to be the right thing to do on both sides of the aisle. But again, I think we're compelled as supporters of global health and of development in these trying times to be hard-headed about it. And I think in addition to, we need to look at national security linkages. We need to look at economic linkages. The political adage is taking a poll of, do you like the box of kittens? Well, yes, I like the box of kittens a lot. But budgets are about political priorities. And the question is not whether you support it, it's whether you will prioritize it over other things. Now, of course, let's again go back to Tim's point. This is a tiny, tiny fraction of a very large play here. And so we're not asking for global health to dominate the federal budget in any sense, but we're saying just a bit more for this, what I think is a very important piece.
This you may have just answered this, but I'm actually going to go to a question that we got that I think it would just be good to hear how everyone would respond to this. It's a question from Christine Martin, who's a nurse working in Minnesota. And she says, why are we focusing on global initiatives for healthcare when our own country's needs are not being met? Let's keep the little money we do have and operate under the principle of charity begins with our own. Is it all about image? Ask the American people how they want their healthcare dollars spent and don't cut existing programs. So that's another – we talked about the challenges that the budget's going to experience in Congress and the role of the advocacy community and the administration. So here's a person who maybe is involved in global health, maybe not, but is putting up an argument. What would you say back?
Maybe. Well, it's not as if the president hasn't made healthcare reform a central part of his agenda. He has said that this is his top priority, and he's strongly committed to it. That's the first thing, and he has a healthcare reform team working closely with Congress on this initiative. So he has not viewed this as an either or, but as a both and. The second thing is that we've already made major commitments in the legislation passed in the first days of the administration to healthcare reform. The CHIP bill to get more children health coverage, expanding COBRA so that more people who get unemployed can retain health coverage, and then major investments in the Recovery Act, investment in health information technology so we can have electronic health records, a major investment in comparative effectiveness research so we have some more information to help doctors and patients make choices when they have alternatives, and then a big investment of $1 billion a year in the area of prevention and wellness. So the president has made a major commitment to health care reform domestically, said it's critical to the economic and fiscal viability of the country. He's already signed bills that have made major investments in reform and major investments to make sure that Americans who don't have coverage can either retain their coverage or children, in the case of the CHIP bill, get more coverage.
Just looking at the numbers, I would say that the amount that we're talking about spending in global health is a relatively tiny amount compared to the amount that we're talking about domestic health as it is now and domestic health under health reform. Having said that, that it's a relatively small amount compared to domestic health, it's an incredibly crucial part for overseas for both compassionate reasons, I believe for security reasons, and I also believe for the long-term development and trade agenda too.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We're repeating ourselves once again, but I do. I mean, if you look at the national, if you look at the national security budget, you know, our diplomatic activities led by the State Department and our development activities, of which global health is so critical, is just a small fraction of the total pie. You know, in the last administration and supported by the new administration, the three pillars of our national security strategy, defense, diplomacy, and development, remain, and yet there seems to be a great deal of support for the defense side. People seem to understand that, and obviously there are adjustments between and among administrations. But the notion that we shouldn't do more for one of those critical legs of the pillar, it seems out of balance. And I think it should be viewed in that context.
When we spend hundreds of billions of dollars on health, in a country of 300 million, and we spend less than $10 billion on health in a world of billions of people who need help, I think it's really important on this kind of question to keep some perspective. And if you're not sold by the compassion, and many Americans are, they give in their churches, they give to their favorite charity, NGOs, and so on, then this whole stability question. We talk about national security, and sometimes that gets overused, and people say, wait a minute, help me understand that. But if you take countries that become destabilized because of, and AIDS is a good example, because it hits people in their active, productive years and devastates whole societies and communities, creates an enormous amount of instability in countries, in cities, in regions, all of which can explode in ways that the U.S. is forced to come in later. It's really an investment that's in our interest. But these fundamental facts of hundreds of billions domestically versus less than 10 globally is where you have to start, making sure people understand how small this investment really is and how great the returns.
We're actually almost out of time, so I'm going to turn to Zeke and ask you one other question, which is in terms of thinking in the near term, what should advocates or the Congress be thinking about? Is the administration looking at a timeline with the interagency process, the strategy? What's going to happen with that the next marker, in a sense?
I'm not sure I can answer the question on the next marker, but there is this ongoing interagency process. It's meeting regularly, and we're working, I think, pretty diligently to flesh out the budget request and to get, as was recommended here by Tom, I think that some hard quantifiable goals that we can be held accountable to, the agencies on the ground can be held accountable to. I think there's a lot of sympathy for that inside the administration. The next sort of deadline, I believe, we need to have a The Global AIDS Coordinator confirmed. We need to have a strategic plan that's due in Congress, as I mentioned, in October. That's for HIV. There's no deadline on the TB and malaria ones, but we're hoping to get those simultaneously. And so those are very concrete measures about the sort of strategic plan going forward.
Okay. So lots to look for.
Can I say what the most critical next date is?
Yes, the advocacy of the last one. Yeah.
Will the 302 be allocation to the budget? Because if, and that the technical term is for how much sand is going to be in the international affairs sandbox, if there isn't enough sand, all that we've talked about will really not have the opportunity to flourish.
When should we be expecting to see that?
It's actually over in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
The domestic AIDS advocates have become very sophisticated in making sure that there's enough 302B allocation to their subcommittee. I'm sure the global health advocates will follow.
Yes. Anyway, there's clearly a lot we could continue to talk about, but we're going to have to end. So I'm going to thank all of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you very much.
And I would like to thank all of you for your questions. On our website, globalhealth.kff.org, you'll find additional resources on today's In Focus. And we encourage you to share the video and transcript with your own audiences. We also hope that you'll join us for future webcasts of U.S. Global Health Policy in Focus. I'm Jen Cates of the Kaiser Family Foundation. Thank you.